Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I've kind of had former Georgia coach Mark Richt on my mind a little bit this week, which is probably maybe a somewhat surprising thing to start the show with on a Friday, but if you'll give me a couple of minutes to sort of set all of this up, I think we're going to kind of arrive at a place here in a couple of minutes where we can kind of all agree that maybe Georgia has had a bit of good fortune that a few other SEC teams haven't necessarily had, been able to enjoy here. Let me sort of explain how I get to this and how it has come to be that I've had Richt on my mind here a little bit this week. It all kind of starts with a couple of topics that we've had on SEC Country Live this week. The afternoon show that I do on the SEC Country YouTube and Facebook pages with the former Alabama All-American Mike Johnson. And one of the things that we've talked a little bit about is the start of the Jeremy Pruitt era there at Tennessee. And it's hard not to notice ways in which Pruitt at Tennessee feels a little bit like when Kirby Smart came to be Georgia's coach to start the 2016 season. Pruitt was Alabama defensive coordinator, just like Kirby Smart was. He learned under Nick Saban, sort of this tenacious recruiter. A lot of the profile for these two guys is very similar. But what Pruitt is sort of tasked with doing at Tennessee is a lot different than maybe what Kirby Smart was tasked with doing at Georgia. And I think that you give Mark Richt a little bit of the credit for this. Let me explain this. Jeremy Pruitt was talking this week about, kind of what's going to be important for the rest of spring for Tennessee and that spring game that's upcoming. And in the midst of doing that, said, hey, right now we don't have any starters. Right now this is a big competition just to find out who wants to be out there and compete and who wants to be able to play. Here is what Jeremy Pruitt said about that earlier this week.
Every day we evaluate all four groups. So we don't have any starters. We don't have any second team guys, third team guys. We have a rep chart. Everything is being evaluated. I think there's only so much pressure that a coach and staff can put on guys to see how they respond in adverse situations. When you go to a scrimmage, it's the first time, and I've seen guys that, they may practice really well for, 1 day, 2 day, 3 days, and then you go to a scrimmage situation, so it's new. Maybe you go from the practice field to the stadium, and maybe they have anxiety, so they don't perform well at the stadium. Or maybe you see guys that, are fine in all the practice situations, but then you go to the stadium and there's 102,000 people in the stadium, and they have anxiety there. They don't respond the right way. Or sometimes you find guys who kind of rise to the occasion.
Yeah, sometimes you rise to the occasion, and maybe for Tennessee coach Jeremy Pruitt, who you just heard from there, maybe they're going to find some guys who can be starters here over the next couple of weeks and sort of find some guys who kind of want to compete at the SEC level. But another SEC analyst has suggested to Jeremy Pruitt, while you're looking for some guys to start and while you're looking for some guys to earn some big-time playing time, you're probably going to need to run a few guys off as well, kick a couple guys off the team, or at least diminish their ability to impact the Tennessee team. It's Cole Kublik, who is an SEC network analyst. He's also a radio host now with the sports radio station in Birmingham, WJOX, and he spoke to SEC Country this week. Mike Griffith, the writer of this piece for the SEC Country Tennessee page, he got what I thought was a pretty fascinating quote from the former Auburn offensive lineman, current SEC network analyst Cole Kublik. Let me read it to you. Of course, if you're watching the show, you can see it on the screen. Cole says, "I tell people all the time that the coaching change we went through at Auburn took years off our lives. What we went through in spring in 2 days was the most grueling physically, mentally, and emotionally trying time of my life. They had to make sure the guys they had on the roster absolutely wanted to be a part of that football team. And the only way to do that is to make them prove it." So Cole Kublik describes, new coach there at Auburn, new era there with the program, and the job for the coaches was to sort of find out who from the old roster wants to really compete. Who from the old roster wants to be a part of the new culture we're building here? And he suggests for Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee, the same thing's got to be done. And frankly, this isn't a unique idea. This isn't some sort of radical point of view. Apparently it's pretty common for coaching changes in the SEC to sort of look at a lot of maybe dead weight, dead wood, however you want to describe it, folks who are just we're not going to be able to contribute underneath the new head coach and in the new culture. Cole Kublik said that there to Mike Griffith, but in a different day on SEC Country Live this week, my partner Mike Johnson was a part of the coaching change at Alabama, going from the Mike Shula era to the start of the Nick Saban era. He said Saban made no bones about it, sort of behind closed doors. That's exactly what he was looking to do with the Crimson Tide, too. This is a funny story. Listen to Mike Johnson tell it on SEC Country Live.
I was so excited for Tennessee fans when I saw this. And I was like, I was so amped up about it because this is something that Butch Jones is out there saying, boy, these guys are really competing. You know, no matter what, they're really competing. This is Jeremy Pruitt, and it reminded me of a quote I've given you guys a ton of times on the show about when Nick Saban got to Alabama. There was a group of guys that weren't buying in, and you know what he said? As soon as we can replace you, we will replace you. And he went out and got the number one recruiting class in the class of 2008, and he did just that. He replaced those guys that didn't want to buy in. And so I feel like that's that version from Jeremy Pruitt that says, listen, we have some guys that are buying in, and they have chip on their shoulders, and some guys that aren't, and we're going to get those guys.
So before we get back to Georgia, first of all, how much do you love that kind of like behind-the-scenes story about Nick Saban, what he said behind closed doors, looking at some of his players who just weren't working hard, weren't contributing, weren't giving their best, weren't going to fit in the new culture, pointing that finger and saying, as soon as I can replace you, I will. What a great sort of Saban story there, and it sort of fits with what we think we know about Saban, and there's no doubt that that indeed happened. Number one recruiting class comes in for 2008. A lot of Shula's players were going to be gone for, you know, various reasons, and the Alabama dynasties essentially started right there in that moment. Maybe Jeremy Pruitt's going to try to do some of the same kind of stuff at Tennessee, but frankly, that's for the Tennessee podcast to worry. We're a Georgia show, and what is relevant about all of this for Georgia is former Auburn offensive lineman talks about running off a bunch of players during a coaching change. Current Tennessee coach may be dealing with having to run off a bunch of players in the midst of a coaching change. Alabama All-American says when Nick Saban came in, there were some players who had to be run off. There was sort of a new culture that had to be established with what was going to happen there in Tuscaloosa. But look at Georgia. Georgia, after 2016, and clearly, you know, Georgia wasn't achieving enough, right? We know that Mark Richt was supposed to get over that final hump and win a national championship, get in the college football playoff, and that didn't happen. And, you know, I think that Richt, as much as anyone, is sort of disappointed that he missed that mark when he had a chance to at Georgia. But the one thing that you can say about Mark Richt, and when you sort of think about what Mark Richt's place in Georgia football history is, I think you have to mention this as a part of it. That Kirby Smart inherited a situation far better than what Jeremy Pruitt has at Tennessee. I believe far better than what even Dan Mullen has at Florida, who's another name we could maybe mention in this conversation. Far better than what Nick Saban inherited at Alabama when he took that job in 2007. Other SEC schools you kind of mentioned in this regard, where there wasn't some great need to run off a whole bunch of players. I mean, yeah, you've had some players that played in the Mark Richt era that either haven't really played for Kirby Smart or sort of left, but not this sort of mass exodus that signals some sort of great culture change that just wasn't right with Georgia. In fact, look at the team that just made the college football playoff, that won the SEC championship and came within an eyelash of winning the national championship. How many of those players were brought to Georgia by Mark Richt and sort of brought to a competitive level by Mark Richt? Think about the guys that were Dog Nation Appreciation, Nick Chubb and Sony Michel, Davin Bellamy, Lorenzo Carter, Roquan Smith. At Dog Nation Appreciation a few nights ago, they all told great stories about their fondness for Mark Richt and how he helped them as football players, and certainly the work that Richt did with those guys also helped Georgia to get to the college football playoff, which is not to say that Kirby Smart only got there with Richt's players. We know that's not true. We know that Kirby Smart's already proven himself to be a better recruiter than Mark Richt, and what he added with his classes of 2016 and 2017 also made it possible to sort of get into that college football playoff conversation. But as the Kirby Smart era moves on years and years into the future, I think that he's going to have great success, and I think that great success may make it in some respects a little bit difficult to sort of determine what the legacy of Mark Richt is supposed to be. And my point here on a Friday before a holiday Sunday is to sort of take a moment and maybe a spirit of gratitude that I hope we all have here this weekend. but also a sense of gratitude about the Georgia program to sort of look back at the baton that Mark Richt was able to pass to Kirby Smart. It set up Kirby Smart as a first-time head coach to be in a much better situation than a lot of other first-time head coaches would be. And the Georgia program is benefiting from that right now. Yes, I do believe, and sort of the bottom line of this entire discussion is, that Mark Richt has a special place in the history of Georgia football. Not maybe what Dog fans wanted to be, and not probably what Richt personally wanted to be. There's no national championship there. But when Georgia eventually does win a national championship, I think Mark Richt played a role in getting Georgia to, at least in some measure, to that spot. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. So glad you are with us, no matter how you're accessing us today. You can watch us on video. A couple different ways for you to check out the program on video: the Dog Nation Facebook page, the Dog Nation YouTube page. We broadcast the show live every morning at 10 a.m. You can also go back and rewatch it. The on-demand feature there for the video is pretty effective. It seems like a lot of you really enjoy doing that. We also love being on the radio with our friends in Athens on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We check in there with them at noon every day. The folks in Athens are smiling right now because of the play of the Diamond Dogs baseball team. We'll have more on that in a moment. But we love being with 960 The Ref. And don't forget, you can hear Georgia baseball on 960 The Ref all weekend long. And by the way, if you love the show in podcast form, you like the audio version when you're working out, when you're driving, when you're, you know, you want to hide the earbuds at work so the boss doesn't know you're checking in on UGA football, well, we're glad to have you there. Also, Apple Podcasts, Android devices, SoundCloud, the world-famous DogNation.com. We're just really glad you found Dog Nation Daily and hope you're getting ready to enjoy a very happy Easter weekend. Of course, if you're having that big cookout at your house or the big Easter ham or whatever, of course, a great way to get all the groceries for that is with Kroger. And, of course, the most convenient way to get groceries from Kroger is with the Kroger Click List. Go sign up for it and drive to the store. You don't even have to get out of your car. They come right over and they bring the groceries right there to you. And speaking of the Kroger Click List, every Friday here on Dog Nation Daily, we do our Kroger Click List checklist. Let's check in on a busy weekend for UGA Athletics. I mentioned Diamond Dogs Baseball, who, by the way, got a big win over Texas A&M last night. Biggest one of the season thus far for the Diamond Dogs against the Aggies there in Athens. They'll play tonight and then Saturday to finish off that three-game set against ranked Texas A&M as Georgia makes a big move here in college baseball. Georgia's set to be ranked in all the major polls themselves next week, and this weekend's a big step in that direction, so good luck to the Diamond Dogs against Texas A&M. Also, the sixth-ranked UGA softball team goes to number 7 Tennessee for a three-game series that actually also a little bit of a weird scheduling here. They'll play Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So Diamond Dogs hosting Texas A&M, number 6 softball team at number 7 Tennessee. Busy weekend for spring sports there at UGA. It's all a part of our Kroger Click List checklist. And by the way, speaking of Kroger, the march to savings continues at Kroger, where food and fans unite. You're watching a little hardball, or not hardball, a little round ball on the hardwood. Let me get my sports analogies taken care of here. If you're doing that this weekend, then you want to mix and match participating items for Slam Dunk Savings at your local Kroger. They do the Kroger Click List checklist with us every Friday here on Dog Nation Daily. We've got Jeff Sintel coming up in just a couple of moments. Let me look at a couple of the Georgia running backs, though, in the NFL draft here for a second. Daniel Jeremiah, really good broadcast on the NFL Network. On his show recently, he was able to bring in former Georgia running back Sony Michel, looking ahead to Michel's future in the NFL draft. And Michel talking about his sort of strengths and what he brings to the professional league there on Sunday. Well, you know, Jeremiah brought up the underrated aspect of Sony Michel's power. And I want you to listen to this clip from Michel from the NFL Network, where he gives credit for that strength and power he's shown as a running back to his partner in crime there in the UGA backfield, Nick Chubb. If you're a Georgia fan, you're going to love what Michel says about Chubb here. Take a listen to this.
This is what I think is underrated, though, because Chubb, your teammate, gets talked about how big and strong and physical he is. I see you run hard as well, and we see what you can do in the passing game. But I feel like your power is your most underrated aspect.
I think so, too. Chubb, great job with power. And that's kind of what motivates me to be as powerful. I see him be powerful. I'm like, man, I want to be powerful like him. So, you know, I learned it from him, and I kind of try to emulate that. And I feel like, you know, I've been successful this season with having more power.
So, I love that for a couple of reasons. A, as far as, like, the real analysis goes, Nick Sony Michel being underrated as a power back more than just a guy that can catch the football, more than just a guy that shows elusive speed. I think that's true for Sony Michel. I think you need to look no further than 2015 for that. Remember when Nick Chubb was hurt and Michel became the featured back for Georgia? It wasn't a great team necessarily. It's a team that fell short of some of the expectations that Dog fans would have had. But Michel, nearly 1,300 yards rushing that season, he showed himself as a powerful running back. And I also love, how could you not love what Michel says as far as paying tribute to Nick Chubb, that he sees the strength and power with Nick Chubb running with. He could have added Chubb's ability to recover from that 2015 injury and come back and show that in 2016 and 2017. It's really cool there to listen to the affection that Michel has for Chubb, the guy that he ran with, because, frankly, this is Sony Michel on the NFL Network to talk about his own NFL draft future, to think about his own future paychecks here. I mean, you know, talking about another running back here. I mean, there's some guys who may not want to do that. There's some guys who get given a chance to be spotlighted on the NFL Network might only want to talk about themselves. But Michelle and Chubb have always been good friends and, frankly, the consummate teammates. And you see that from Michelle there on the NFL Network, too. I thought all of that was really pretty cool. So it's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily today. Hope you're getting ready for a good weekend. And let's get our weekend started the way we always do on Fridays. Let's welcome Jeff Sintel into Dog Nation Daily right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Jeff Sintel, happy Good Friday to you. Happy Easter weekend. I hope that everything is going well with you today and that you're getting ready for a nice weekend with family. We certainly appreciate your time on the program today. How you doing?
Hey, Brandon. I'm great, man. The main question I have for you today, sir, all-time greatest favorite Easter candy, go.
All right, so I really like two things. I love I like basic Hershey's chocolate. I'm a very simple guy. I like just the basic Hershey's chocolate Easter bunnies. But how could you not like those Reese's eggs? You know what I'm talking about, like the egg-shaped Reese's? How good are those things? Like, I just like Reese's in general, but those are my two go-to candies, the Reese's eggs and the Hershey's bunnies. I don't like Peeps. I wouldn't feed my enemy a Cadbury egg. I don't like any of that kind of stuff. But I'm going to go to Kroger and I'm going to load up on the Reese's eggs and the Hershey's bunnies.
You know, Brandon, I've got a theory. I think more people buy peanut butter eggs for Easter than they do maybe even rivaling Halloween. Because the Easter candy is kind of like unexpected. You know, you used to get that peanut butter egg and you're like, oh my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Three bags. Another story altogether. And hey, speaking of Cadbury eggs, I know our audience would be pleased to hear that it looks like Florida and Tennessee both got major recruits this week in upcoming classes. So that's kind of like somebody eating a Cadbury egg in July, right?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Kind of that rarity.
But they're 2020 kids, or at least the Florida guys are 2020 kids. So that's they'll be a long time before we worry about that. What I noticed about Florida before we get into the Georgia stuff is they took a commit this week from a kid outside the top 700. So so far, the Dan Mullen recruiting era is not working out all that much better than the Jim McElwain era did, if you don't mind me saying so.
Hey, man, that squirrel at the University of Florida, it has X-ray vision, man. It's not blind. He sees a diamond in the rough there, sir.
That is well said, Jeff. I appreciate you adding a little class to my somewhat snarky dig. Let me talk about some Georgia recruiting here for a moment. And I love the piece that you wrote about Chuck Smith and his sort of tutelage of Nolan Smith. A, because I like Chuck a lot. Chuck goes to my church. I bump into him from time to time, and we talk a little bit of football here and there. And, you know, he's doing some great work with Nolan Smith, which I want to find out, you know, some more from you about. But, I mean, how common do you see this now where, you know, these guys like Nolan Smith, and you could say quarterbacks, I know that Fromm's had his coaches, and really every position's got some version of this now, where by the time these guys get onto a college campus, Nolan goes to IMG, that's a factory, individual coaching here. These guys are already pretty polished prospects by the time they even arrive on campus, right?
Well, the first thing with Mr. Chuck Smith is he did hail from Athens, Georgia, did go to Tennessee, but then did play a lot of years for the Falcons. So I guess that's kind of like a good thing, a not so good thing, and then he got cleansed again by playing in state for the Falcons.
Right.
But you know, the big thing, Brandon, I think that just jumps out at me in this story is Chuck Smith is kind of like, and I even linked a CBSSports.com story. He's been called the Phil Jackson of pass rush or the sack whisperer. he's a guy that Bud Dupree's of the world go to get their toolkit all polished up before they go into the draft and their workouts. He's a guy Von Miller works with. He's a guy with Aaron Donald works with, so they can find the next levels to their craft. And here you have Nolan Smith, who is as physically put together with as high of a motor as you will see in the high school game. And he's already been working with Chuck Smith in order to find different levels and, you know, just to find new games in his game and to keep getting better. And when you have a player that's already as good as Nolan Smith working with Chuck Smith at IMG Academy in a factory and still trying to find summertime to come up to Georgia, come up to Atlanta, and work with one of the game's great teachers at his position, that just shows there is a crazy good work ethic there from Mr. Nolan Smith.
You know who raves about Chuck Smith, too, is Davin Bellamy. I don't know if Davin worked with him before his Georgia career ended or not, but he's been working with him in sort of post-college career, getting ready for the NFL draft. And I talked to Davin about this a little bit, Dog Nation appreciation, kind of away from the crowd. Davin is really, really grateful for the individual coaching that he's gotten from Chuck Smith. It's also a little bit like what Terrence Edwards has done, both partially at Pace Academy, but also with some of the individual guys he's worked with, Tavares King and some of the 2018, 2019 guys he's working with. Mm-hmm. Terrence Edwards is kind of in that same conversation too.
Yeah, I would call Terrence Edwards the wide receiver whisperer, if you want to call him that, or maybe because see the thing there with all these guys that are already working with him, and one particular quote that stood out to me that I got from Chuck Smith. And let's all remember, Dog fans as well, Bellamy has worked with Chuck Smith. Lorenzo Carter has worked with Chuck Smith. And Chuck Smith's prescription for Nolan to get him as good as he possibly can be heading into Saturdays, he said he wants him running like Lorenzo Carter. He already does that. Spinning like Von Miller. He wants him running and spinning like Davin Bellamy as well. I mean, you just drop all these big time names into the process here for a guy like Nolan Smith. That's the guy. Chuck Smith is the guy. Those guys go to get better, and that's a pretty impressive sight when you think about all things Georgia. Considering, you know, everybody can catch that Wolfpack thing, and it's the Nolan Smith thing's kind of funny. Like, I think I said this on our Facebook live chat, and I may be only about maybe a six iron or maybe even a pitching wedge away from being really accurate with this. But to me, Nolan Smith anywhere else from Georgia kind of sounds like that, you know, worrisome talk that Georgia fans had with Justin Fields going to go play pro baseball.
Yep.
It's something to worry about. It's a possibility. Anything could happen. But maybe the Adams family might be more worried about getting Cadbury eggs in Brandon's Easter basket than something like that.
That is well said, Jeff. All right, let me talk to you about wide receivers for a moment. And a guy that you saw this past Sunday there at Buford for the opening qualifier, that's George Pickens, current Auburn commit. And I'm not going to lie to you, I'll be very, very transparent here. Obviously, I've got my attention on Lanson, the young man from South Florida. I think that'd just be a cool get for Georgia were it able to get him. But I will admit, there is a sort of vindictive part of me that loves the idea of flipping a player from Auburn, even if it's not my sort of next choice at the position. You seem impressed with George Pickens, though. There are a lot of guys who saw him at Buford this past weekend that were quite impressed with him. So tell us the story here about this Auburn commit for a moment.
Oh, Brandon, why you got to go there, man? Yeah, you get a little bit more juice from the storyline because it's flipping someone away from Auburn again.
But, Jeff, I'm not proud. I am not proud of being the way that I am. But I must be I must authentically be me on this show. I do like the idea of seeing Georgia flip guys from Auburn.
Yep, that's correct. Playing the part of Brandon Adams is definitely Brandon Adams. He's not holding anything back there. I'll say, you know, first of all, a portion of you liked Ladson so much because, A, he has size and speed. The film looks pretty good. He's from South Florida. Georgia has inroads there now. But he's rated so highly, and there's part of that number one, number two, number three trifecta to think about.
Without a doubt.
Think about right there, which would be cornering the market. It would be good PR. It would be even more buzz for Georgia when it comes to recruiting. But that Pickens, and I'm just going to quote him, what he said after one of his catches on the sidelines at the opening on Sunday. George Pickens is a bad, bad, bad man. He's 6'5", 190, plays at one of the true factory powerhouses, hard workers, hardworking programs in the country, which is Hoover High in Alabama. The head coach actually takes a special interest in coaching the wide receivers. That's Josh Niblett at Hoover. Everybody remembers Hoover, two a days, Rush Probst back in the day, growing up around the, you know, turn of the century where Hoover High was being chronicled. That's a really good player, 6'5", 190. He's rated as the nation's number 25 wide receiver, 24-25 wide receiver on the 24/7 Sports Composite. That young man's stock is going to soar. I don't know if there was much separation. Brandon, Jaden Hazelwood was there, playing at about 85% after going to a prom and a camp and everything else like that. Dominic Blaylock was there. Jermaine Burton was there, that tremendously flashy, talented wide receiver out of Marietta through IMG, who was initially at Hayville Charter. I think Jermaine Burton will be the number one receiver in the country for 2020. He's just that, simply that good. But George Pickens, there was at times the way he played and the way he flashed skill where you were wondering, I wonder who are the best receivers here. And sometimes Pickens looked as good as anybody. Warren Burrell, North Gwinnett, standout, flashy, big-time lockdown corner for those Bulldogs. He told me, he even tweeted it out after the event, he thought George Pickens was the best receiver in the country. So that is a very informed statement when Warren Burrell said something like that.
And you do see this from time to time, and you're totally right about Lats, and I'm sort of fascinated with him because of his rank and because he's another big player from South Florida and all the sort of, you know, shiny, flashy reasons why someone might like Latson. But when it comes to the actual guys competing against these recruits, oftentimes their ranking and their sort of pecking order is very different than people like me who sort of talk about this stuff for a living. If you're on the field, you have a way of sometimes seeing this in a slightly different way. And as you said, you know, whether it be Burrell or other players, there are a lot of guys who really like what Pickens brings to the table here.
I think, Brandon, if you want to think of the best Georgia-centric reason to think about the advocacy for George Pickens into the Georgia class, is that would probably say a lot about the new wide receivers coach, Cortez Hankton. If he could establish a relationship with an Auburn commitment, George Pickens has been committed since last July, I believe, to Auburn. If he could go after a player in the SEC and produce a flip like that in his first year recruiting for Georgia, that's going to bode well for the receiver room and the recruiting at that position going forward. Ladson would be a huge haul there as well, but I think Hankton would probably have his hands all over that flip if that were to happen.
Let me talk to you about Kyle Hamilton for a moment, because you wrote a great piece about him again the other day. And, you know, I thought Hamilton had a very mature quote to you about admittedly not running as fast as he would have liked for his 40 time at the opening event there. But you had a great line near the end of that piece about Hamilton where you said that Kirby Smart knew enough to offer Hamilton after seeing, I believe you said, just two plays on his highlight tape. What is it that Kirby Smart likes about the safety from Marist here? What is it about those two plays in particular, you know, brief window into his ability as a player, that sort of attracted Kirby Smart to him immediately?
Yeah, those are good points, Brandon. I've been writing about Hamilton, I guess, basically since I really saw that junior tape, and I just shook my head because I do put him in the category of the safeties Georgia has recruited over the last few years. You can think about Xavier McKinney. You can think about Richard McCown. You can think about D'Angelo Gibbs. You can think about Trey Bishop. Kyle Hamilton belongs in the room with all of those dudes because he is a tremendous player. You can throw Tyreek Johnson in there as well. The thing that I think that, and first of all, let's just put the right framing around that 4.79 and the 40. He actually, I think, stumbled at first. George Pickens, the guy that we just threw bouquet after bouquet for right now, he ran a 4.71, I believe, on his 40 on the laser. So you're talking about a 6'5", 190 receiver, 4.71, and you got a 6'4", 188-pound safety that's running a 4.79. You ask me, if you put guys like Richard Sherman on the laser when they were running, those guys would have tremendous NFL careers. I don't know if Richard Sherman is a 4.7, 4.75 on the laser. He just knows how to use his length and intelligence and size and play the game at a very high level. Hamilton, you just see the tape, you just flip it on. You could probably play, I don't know, it's sometimes You can look at a huddle film, Brandon, and you can just kind of play Ouija board with it. You can just pull the cursor halfway into the middle of the tape, and you can look at those two or three plays, and those better stand out if it is an elite player. Hamilton has that all over his game. He'd never thrown the power ball or trained for the power ball ever heading into the Nike opening, and he almost throws it past the tape at like 44 feet. That's the 99th percentile there. He runs a 4.2 short shuttle. That's very fast, 4.25. Nolan Smith only ran a 4.15 on the short shuttle. Very, very smart, dialed-in kid. I also like the quote he said about time management. I was asking him, what's the secret recipe for a football player to get a 30 on their ACT? And he's like, man, it's not that hard. Any high school kid in America can find 4 hours out of their week to study for their ACT and score very high on that exam. Now, he makes it sound a little too simple.
Right.
But I like the way he realizes he comes from a culture of work equals results.
Since we have been candid and honest here on our interview here today, let me keep that going. When I tell you that when you look at Max Johnson, the 2020 quarterback prospect from Oconee County, there is a lot to like about this quarterback. There's no denying that. And yet, I got to tell you, Jeff, I have zero enthusiasm or optimism that Johnson would end up choosing Georgia, given the family tie to Miami. Of course, he's Brad Johnson's son. The kind of legacy tie to Florida State, his dad played for the Seminoles. This seems to me to be a guy destined to play his college football somewhere in the Sunshine State, even though he's playing his high school ball within an eyelash of Sanford Stadium. So I like him as a player, but I have very little optimism that he'd come to Georgia as a part of the 2020 class. What's your take on that?
Brandon, I think your instincts serve you well on that one. Not to try and sound like a Jedi from Star Wars or something like that, but there are natural ties to the state of to the Miami program. Mark Richt, the relationship there, Brad Johnson, FSU. He's been to those two schools a lot. He's been to Georgia a lot, basically because of proximity. I think Georgia would have an uphill climb there to get Max Johnson. But he, to me, he was a wow guy for me at the Nike Atlanta opening because he doesn't do a lot of the 7-on-7 things like Aaron McLaughlin and Harrison Bailey do. So that was a chance to see a new and improved Max Johnson on a big stage, and he was thundering and powering that ball downfield, powering the vertical routes downfield. 6'5", 215. I've been told that he probably has about an inch or so more in his growth plate. He might end up 6'7", 6'6", 6'6", 6'5", 230. He's a guy. I'm trying to figure out who the best young quarterback is in the state of Georgia. I don't think there's a natural candidate in 2019. I think it's going to come down to McLaughlin, Bailey, and Max Johnson is the new next big thing for the state of Georgia when it comes to a Peach State elite quarterback. Max Johnson planted his name firmly into that discussion with how he looked at the Atlanta opening.
It's a weird irony, too, and this is nobody's fault. It's just the way things work out, that you've got Oconee County, which is one of the closest high schools to the University of Georgia. They're going to have had, within the last decade, two super, you know, big-time quarterback prospects, and neither of them end up making a big impact to Georgia. Zach Mettenberger obviously ends up at LSU. Max Johnson, I believe, is going to go somewhere else. It's just kind of funny how this works out from time to time, because you'd think it'd be like the greatest luck in the world to have, you know, two quarterback prospects within your own backyard, but for very different reasons, both these guys probably end up playing their college ball somewhere else.
Oh, no, that's the Friday, Brandon, that everyone loves coming out here. First takeaway, number one, has it already been that long since Zach Mettenberger was matriculating in Georgia? Aaron Murray was kind of the reason why that didn't happen. And then if Mark Richt was still the head coach at the University of Georgia come 2020, then I think Max Johnson would have been a very, very good lean, very clear lean to the University of Georgia, should those things have shaken themselves out. But Brandon, you of all people on this show should know that Georgia and the quarterback position, those quarterback fairies have left a lot of nuggets underneath their pillow at night right now for the quarterback at the University of Georgia. You're going to be okay with letting that girl next door, that five-star QB next door, get away, considering what's already there for the position in Athens. And I still think that there's going to be a 2019 big arm that comes and joins the class. A lot of those guys don't mind waiting, and 2020 might be the year where Georgia really goes after another elite passer. There's names like Robbie Ashford, another dual threat, 6'3", 210 pounder out of Hoover High, the same Hoover High that we just spoke about there with George Pickens. There are going to be plenty of quarterbacks besides these that end up stacking that depth chart at Georgia.
Let me go to the other side of the ball here for a moment in the couple minutes we have left together. I love that the five-star linebacker, Nakobe Dean, a couple weeks ago releases his top 15. I think we've got the tweet we can show the folks watching on video. My favorite thing about it, Jeff, is with 15 finalists, there's almost too many logos to fit them inside one screen here. It's almost like as many logos as can be fit into one Twitter edit here. I feel like we're getting pretty close to somebody doing a list of finalists, a little bit like Joe Lunardi's bracketology, where you've got a field of 68 and the first four out, the next four in. And I mean, top 15 is about pushing the limit of how many schools that you can mention and still consider those finalists, right?
Brandon, there was one last year. I won't say the name. It was actually a lineman of all folks that made a top 20 last year. And you may be onto something with your bracketology, Brandon. What if a recruit had all 64 or all 48 of his offers all lined up, and he just simply eliminated one-to-one head-to-head during a weekly tweet that went out? That would get the graphics and edits department that surround that young man. That would keep them pretty busy. But it's funny because these kids tweet out their top 15, and basically at the same time, they already know what their four or five officials are going to be, and they already know what their next cut is. It's funny how – In my experience, it's funny how a lot of these young men make the top 15 or make the top 12, and they already have their idea of what their next cut down will be as well. Nakobe Dean is another guy that I think Georgia might be eventually surfacing around second, third, fourth place there for Nakobe Dean.
Yeah.
Father's a doctor, 6', 215 pounds, very rangy linebacker. There are a lot of suitors right now for the University of Georgia when it comes to that inside linebacker spot. They've got a commitment from an outside backer, at least as the way he's rated in J.D. Bertrand. There's Tresman Marshall, whose decision might take a little bit longer now than a lot of people were thinking. Out of Clinch County in Homerville, he's actually rated as the nation's number 7 or 8 athlete. Oh, and then there's Cinco de Popo that I know, Brandon.
Oh, yes.
You don't need me to remind you about May the 5th.
Oh,
and
yes.
Most of Dog Nation's audience doesn't need a reminder about the significance of May 5th when it comes to UGA, potentially another five-star, and checking off the big box for that inside linebacker spot.
No doubt about that whatsoever. We're excited about that date for sure. Jeff, we'll look forward to talking to you a lot about that as we head towards that direction. Thanks for being here with us on Dog Nation Daily. Hope you enjoy your weekend, and we'll look forward to catching up with you again here soon.
Brandon, I hope there are no peeps in your basket, sir. Have a good weekend.
See you, buddy.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Love Jeff Sintel on a Friday. He always lets us keep him a little long, and we kind of drag as much recruiting info as we can get out of him. It's always a lot of fun to do, and we're glad you're with us for it here today on a Dog Nation Daily. And by the way, as you get ready for Easter on Sunday, don't forget, you know, a lot of you got a lot of stuff going on, whether it's like the candy or the Easter baskets. I mean, trust me, like it has been like a 4-alarm fire at my house all week long between, you know, decorating eggs for like 9,000 different, you know, functions and the stuff that's going to be cooked on Sunday. It's just a guarantee. I mean, it's just a rock solid given that we're going to forget something at some point in time. That's why Kroger steps in for you, and they are open normal hours on Sunday. So when you don't have that, what is it, like vinegar that you got to mix with the dye for the eggs, when you realize you don't have any more of that, Kroger's open. When you need some more food coloring, or you got to have the glaze for the ham, or I don't even know what it is that you forget. That's the whole reason why you forget it, I guess. Whatever you're thinking about for that last-minute thing on Easter Sunday, Kroger is open regular hours, so you can go check it out with them there at Kroger. And, of course, we appreciate Kroger being a part of Dog Nation Daily. Let's do our SEC through here for a moment, though, and let's talk about a couple stories around the SEC. And one of these is something that I'd like to say I sort of got this conversation started on SEC Country Live a little earlier this week, and there's been more conversation generated from that. I referenced a quote that Rhett Lashley, the former Auburn offensive coordinator, had given Chris Vanini to The Athletic, essentially explaining why he left Auburn. He was ready to sort of move on to the next phase of his career. He wanted full control of the Auburn play-calling duties, and he suggested Gus Malzahn was going to sort of always want to be involved in the offense. Well, if that was Lashley's assessment of his time at Auburn, does the same thing still hold true for Chip Lindsey at Auburn now? And I think this is a fascinating conversation. This is one of those things where, like on SEC Country Live, Mike Johnson, my partner and I, we seem to be on opposite sides. He thinks that Malzahn's highest and best use and value is as a play caller. And at this point in time, I don't think that's the case anymore. I think that play calling is sort of a job all on its own. To have that job and another job, I think, is not a coach at his best there at that point in time. I think that Chip Lindsey is a sharp offensive mind. Many folks in the state of Georgia will remember Lindsey as Hudson Mason's high school coach there at Lassiter, and he sort of worked his way up the coaching ranks since then. Auburn probably has a pretty good offensive coordinator, but did it let him have control last season? Did Malzahn let Lindsey have control last season? You could say in the LSU loss, maybe that Malzahn's blueprint, his fingerprints were on that fourth quarter collapse there. Auburn's at its best if Chip Lindsey has the offense and Malzahn has the rest of the team, the overseeing of the entire program. But if Malzahn tries to get involved again this season, even with a talented quarterback, Auburn may suffer from that. Alabama here for a moment. This is kind of interesting. I have said that there's really no problem if Alabama wants to play both of its quarterbacks this season. Tua Tagovailoa some, Jalen Hurts some. Alabama's going to be a huge favorite in virtually every game it plays, other than maybe Auburn at the end of the season, but they're still a fairly significant favorite in that game, given the fact that it's going to take place in Bryant-Denny Stadium. So I've said you can play Tua and still win. You can play Hurts and still win. Ultimately, doesn't really matter all that much. But a couple Alabama reporters brought up something kind of interesting. They asked Jonah Williams, the starting left tackle for the Crimson Tide, about this. And maybe one aspect of the quarterback mattering for Alabama is you've got left-handed Tua Tagovailoa. You've got right-handed Jalen Hurts. Normally, the best offensive lineman protects the blind side. Would Jonah Williams consider moving, or would Alabama consider moving him to left or right, depending on which quarterback is in the game? I think it's actually a pretty fascinating idea. Now, ultimately, I'm not sure that Jonah Williams is still Alabama's best offensive lineman anymore. Alex Leatherwood may take that mantle here this upcoming season. But to the extent that you normally think about your offensive line leader protecting the blind side, it is a different blind side, depending on which quarterback's in the game. That's probably something worth paying attention to. Lane Kiffin spoke to SEC Country again this week. Kiffin, of course, the FAU coach, former Alabama offensive coordinator and Tennessee head coach. He was asked in the SEC which defensive coordinator gave him the most trouble, and he said Dave Aranda, the LSU defensive coordinator. It's a big compliment for Aranda because Kiffin's obviously a pretty sharp offensive mind, and I think it speaks to what LSU needs to be true here this upcoming season. LSU needs to be great defensively. They've got some talent, maybe not quite as much as the Tigers are used to having. There's no obvious pass rush replacement for Arden Key, in other words, although there are certainly some candidates to be able to do that. But Aranda's one of the fastest rising names in the coaching ranks. He's going to need to prove that this season. And then one quick final story to get to. For those of you that have followed Georgia recruiting for quite some time, you may remember when former Grayson defensive back Jamias Williams was a big-time target of Georgia for its 2017 class. Williams ultimately chose to go to South Carolina. Freshman season probably somewhat up, somewhat down as he tried to play the cornerback position. Looks like Williams, though, is going to slide over and try to play safety here in 2018, partially because Gamecocks need safeties, maybe because for the somewhat undersized Williams, the fit at quarterback, or I should say cornerback, just wasn't working out quite too well. So we'll watch him at South Carolina this season, and we'll make that your SEC through. As we wrap up here today, before we get to our Gator Hater countdown, let me also make one more point. I was going to say this earlier in the show and just ran out of time. There was a blogger who covers the Carolina Panthers for SB Nation. His name is Billy Marshall. Panthers are in the market for running back. He looked at the two Georgia running backs, and he said he thinks that Nick Chubb is the better pro prospect over Sonny Michel. This is a tough choice to make. It's sort of like picking between your children. But I do think there is a case to be made for Chubb here in that there has been so much talk about Sonny Michel as of late in the NFL for good reason. I think he's a prototypical NFL back in a lot of ways. It's almost like that Nick Chubb at this point has almost become underrated. It's almost as if his skills are being overlooked. I'm not sure he's better than Michel, but I think he certainly has a chance to be, and I think he's probably an underrated back as you head towards the NFL draft later on this spring. Now for the Gatorator Countdown, 211 days from right now. Georgia goes back to Jacksonville, beats Florida again. It's our Gatorator Countdown. Check out the Dog Nation Daily Double today as well. We'll talk about the Diamond Dogs and see you Monday here on our program.